Hey everybody, welcome to the Beyond Sunday podcast. Just a heads up, this episode we're going to be talking a lot about the hashtag Church2 movement and how the church has historically responded to allegations of sexual assault and within its ranks, and how we can do a better job of that. And I know that may bring up some feelings, some history, some emotion inside of you, and so that's just a heads up for your listening. And also, if you have children in your car, this could be maybe either a good teachable moment for them, or maybe something you want to listen to first before having younger ears hear that. We're not going to get into anything too scandalous, but we just wanted to give you that heads up. All right, thanks for listening.
Got Christmas plans?
Well, this is coming out on January 7th.
Yeah, they don't know when we're recording it.
I've got major Christmas plans for 2019.
There's so many, I have to take almost a year to plan.
We prep early here.
We're on it.
You know, getting ready.
It's about that Lent.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Epiphany. Am I right, everybody?
Yeah. Am I right? Magi, what?
Follow that star like nobody's business.
But wait,
from the
myrrh.
East.
Oh no!
All right, well, welcome back, everybody, to the Beyond Sunday podcast, our first podcast of 2019.
Woo!
Happy New Year!
Yeah, Happy New Year. We hope everybody's doing well on their resolutions. We talked about that last week.
I couldn't pronounce the name of the song last week. I'm not going to try to do it again.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Just humming it.
Well, welcome to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We are exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff, and with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
Hey, Patrick.
And Katie Phillips.
Good morning, afternoon, evening,
and
whatever
good night.
Time it is that you're listening to this.
To our 5 a.m. listeners.
Yes.
Who are either up really late or really early.
Right.
We're happy to have you with us.
That's right.
Yes. All right. Well, today we've got a big day. We're going to probably get maybe a little more serious than we've been over the last couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. We've not been very serious over the last couple
weeks. No,
we have
not. We've had lots of fun.
Yeah, and that's okay. But before we get there, I have a little article for us to look at.
Excellent.
Okay. Katie.
Oh,
no. Are you a hunter? Have you been hunting?
I
know Pastor David has not.
I was going to say, yes, Katie, because he knows the answer.
I have not, like, actual hunting, but I've, like, been skeet shooting.
That's not hunting.
I know that's not hunting.
If you're not aiming for a live object,
no,
you're
I've
not
never
hunting.
Been hunting.
You've been
never
target
been
shooting.
I've been target shooting.
Okay, target shooting, not hunting.
Yeah,
and I assume you've never.
I've
been
never
hunting.
Hunted.
Me neither.
When I was a kid, I pretended to go hunting for like imaginary rabbits and things like that. But
yeah,
I don't think that's
sure.
the same thing. I did like the whole Elmer Fudd. I'm hunting wabbits. You know.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, that's definitely not something.
Yep.
Okay. Well, recently, a poacher, deer poacher. Has been sentenced to a year in prison, and part of his punishment is every month he has to watch Bambi.
Oh, how sad!
So he was illegally hunting deer.
Correct.
Right, as a poacher, he was hunting...
As a trophy hunting deer. He was not hunting for meat, he was hunting for trophy. So that's...
Oh. Is that what makes it illegal, or...?
It's illegal either way, but that would be
for
most
season.
Hunters, they would probably be even more... against hunting a deer just to have
right.
the head on
have,
your wall.
Right.
Interesting.
You know.
Rather than using its meat, and et cetera.
Sure. Right. Especially
so he was,
when you're overkilling.
So he was illegally hunting the deer.
Correct.
Gets caught.
Mm-hmm.
Sentenced to a year in jail.
Yes.
Once a month while in jail.
Yes.
He has to watch Bambi.
He has to watch Bambi.
Now, so they often have like communal movie nights. Does that mean... everyone in the jail has to watch Bambi because this guy is going to get beat up if everyone in the jail has to watch Bambi because of him.
You know, I can't say what's going on in Missouri movie night jails. I'm not an expert on that area.
Fair enough.
But I can tell you, this guy at least has to watch Bambi.
Once a month.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right.
Have you seen Bambi?
Yes.
A long time ago.
Yeah,
I don't
when I was
remember.
A kid,
yeah.
I saw it.
Yeah.
I don't remember it.
I remember like some lines and some highlights, but... yeah.
Yeah, I do not
I
remember.
Don't have anything nice to say. Don't
yeah,
say anything
I remember that.
At all.
I'm Thumper.
I do right? remember yeah. Bambi's mom dying, shot by a hunter. Thank you. Yeah.
Thumper is in the room. Look at us.
but I don't really remember the plot of Bambi in any way. Is there a plot?
Yeah.
Is there a storyline?
Because Bambi's a baby. And
Bambi grows
and
up.
And Bambi's mom is killed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bambi grows up and has to, like, protect.
And
someone.
Kills that hunter that killed
no,
his
he
mom.
Doesn't kill the hunter, but he has to. He like has this like.
There's a fire.
There's a male deer figure that he's like scared of, and he has to like fight this male deer figure to protect his
wow, you
yes.
wife or something.
Yes.
And somebody gets shot at the end, too. I don't remember how. Does Bambi die? Does Bambi die at the end of this?
No.
Is this like Old Yeller? Does it?
No, I don't remember.
Spoiler alerts. I don't know. It's a weird movie. It's
I saw it as a kid. I remember very, very little of it.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I can't imagine it being a part of my punishment for poaching deer, but
sure,
whatever. Hey,
yeah. Well, you can use
good
that
on you, Missouri, for trying new things.
Kitty, you've got some older kids now, so are you going to consider this Disney movie punishment?
Are you going to make Shane watch a Disney movie once a month for the
next week? He already does.
We can make him watch the bad ones.
Your punishment is to watch Toy Story 2.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. Like, you got to watch Dumbo.
Ooh, did you see the new ones coming out?
Yeah, I hated the movie.
Oh.
I don't remember the movie well enough to know if I hated it or not.
I definitely remember not liking it.
Yeah?
Okay. Yeah, you have to watch Pete's Dragon or something. It's super boring.
Yeah, Pete's Dragon is weird. That's true. Yeah. That was like one of the first, not first, but it was one of those like live action slash animated things,
yes.
Which are now like all the rage.
Right.
Are they?
Yeah, like they did the Jungle Book thing and, you know, they've done
the remakes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but those are...
The, like live action with like super CGI animation. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Not like... Hand-drawn, yeah.
Not like Who Framed Roger Rabbit. That's probably the pinnacle of the live-action hand-drawn
movie. I do like Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Yeah. I was scared of that movie as a kid.
So don't use that as punishment, unless you're trying to scare your kid.
Right, yeah. Because the bad guy in Who Framed Roger Rabbit is like super evil.
And
like
move. Just
they're like going
them.
In going into acid or something like that. Like I don't remember the whole deal, but yeah, I was definitely scared of that movie.
Yeah. So there you go. Audience members, tell us how... Tell us what Disney movie would be the most punishment for you to have to watch over and over.
What crime would you commit, and what Disney movie would be the appropriate punishment for it?
Yeah, I definitely... Dumbo I just do not like. I think it's so boring.
So any crime, Dumbo would be a punishment for Patrick.
Yeah, I would say that. I'm not a fan.
All right, we're going to start showing that in staff meetings.
Yes. Right.
I think Frozen is also not great.
You're not like the right age to appreciate.
I'm not a 5-year-old girl.
Right.
Yeah, so.
A 5-year-old girl loves it.
Maybe that's punishment for the parents because they want to watch it.
I will say, like, Frozen for me, this is way off topic, but Frozen for me began to recapture the great aspects of like Disney musical animated movies that I remember as a kid, where like you'd come out and it'd be like 5 new full length songs and all this, and it was a big deal that it was a musical, and like Frozen kind of got back to some of that.
Okay.
So I appreciate that on its
the musical artistry of it.
Sure. Yeah.
It Plus is for my daughter, like Little Mermaid was for me.
Ah, see, there you go.
Sure.
And it's really funny to listen to little girls try to sing those songs.
Let it go.
As someone whose daughter does not know Frozen, and so I can appreciate this from a distance and send these little girls back off to their parents. Sure.
Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Yeah, I find that entertaining.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're moving on.
So more serious matters.
Like I said, we are going to talk a little bit more serious here. So today we're going to talk about... the hashtag Church2 movement. So are you familiar with this hashtag? And we're admittedly late to the game on this one. This is not breaking news. This has existed probably around 1.5-2 years now.
Yeah.
This has been a cultural thing. But we wanted to address this now that it's not breaking news. So we can say, when it's not in your face, how do we handle this situation?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely familiar with it, Katie. Have you?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. For our listeners, if you're unfamiliar, hashtag Church2 is a branch off of hashtag MeToo. So this started tales of sexual assault, and women on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram use this hashtag MeToo to share that they themselves also felt periods and moments and experiences of sexual assault in whatever
assault,
form that
harassment,
might be.
Whatever that might be.
Yeah.
And sometimes it came with a story, sometimes it was just... posting me too, like just sharing. I'm also a part of this, and it was kind of a unity thing. Like a lot of people trying to say, like for those who were stepping up to bring forth accusations against more powerful people, there are women who are kind of stepping forward to say, look, you're not alone. I've been through this too. This is not just a one-off experience.
And I think too, for women who are silenced and who just don't feel like they can talk about it, just being able to see that other women are speaking about it allows them. Somebody else said it, so I guess I can tell my story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, these aren't necessarily singular incidences that are happening with a handful of situations.
Right.
But there's more universal connection. So hashtag Church2 is a branch off that to say, how has the church handled sexual allegations, sexual misconduct, and harassment and assault? And so it was kind of like those same experiences, but within the confines of the Christian church.
Right.
And so that's what we really wanted to look at today. So we're really going to focus mostly into how the church and Christians parents have handled sexual assault, and not just how the culture around us handles sexual assault. Right. We will probably touch in on that on a handful of
because you can't. You have to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so probably it'd be pretty easy to get there, but the church historically and recently has not done a very good job at handling allegations of sexual assault.
Sure.
So why do you think that is? Why has the church, what are some reasons we can come up with that the church has done a poor job in this hashtag Church 2 movement?
Hmm. Well, so I think one, in a lot of areas where you see this most prevalently, and I want to be clear, no denominational background is immune to this.
So, absolutely.
You know, certainly we've had these problems within our own church, within the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America and across the board. But it seems like where they break the most ground and have the most cultural impact are in church systems and structures where a single figure is lifted up as kind of the hinge point for the entire congregation or community, whether that's a non-denominational congregation where a single pastor is, you know, the kind of the founding pastor that built this thing up from his own garage and, you know, left it or took it forward from there. Or we see some of this within the Catholic Church too, where, you know, the priests are not next to God. That's not a fair way to say that, but they're elevated more highly than they are in other traditions. And so in those cases, I think sometimes there is a sense of we have to protect the system and the structure because it is more important than the accusation or than the crime, even to say. And so we're, you know, as a board of trustees or as a council or as a leadership, we're going to do what we have to do, whether that's cover it up or pretend like it didn't happen or ignore it, whatever that might be. We're going to do that so that the system of religiosity that we have set up stays successful and stays in place.
And I think, too, you know, where we're seeing a lot of the Me Too movement having with celebrities and politics and and then in church, that's a third area. And I think, well, I hope that people kind of hold this church to a higher standard than they do celebrities and then they do politicians. Church is kind of this reverent thing, you know, and when something as awful as a sexual harassment issue comes up in a this holy place, I think it's sometimes really hard to own that. You know what I mean? And I think just because it is held to a different standard, maybe, or I don't know, it's just something that people don't expect. I mean, of all places, church should be the safest place for anyone, everybody. It doesn't matter who you are. You know, I mean, that of all places should be the safest place for people to go.
And not even just that the place should be safe, which I completely agree with, Katie, but that, again, you know, that figurehead, how could they would never have done something like that is the general view. Like, I hear them preach every week. They always preach about love and about grace and about accepting people and about being kind to one another. They would never do something like that. And so sometimes it's even just a matter of our own inability or unwillingness to admit that even pastors, even priests are sinners in need of redemption and in danger of this sort of action. Like, you know, there is no one who is incapable of overstepping a boundary.
Yeah, so about 11 months ago, I guess somewhere around last February, a major thing happened in our community. So we had an allegations of sexual assault about...
By our community, we should specify
the Woodlands,
the city community area, around, not our congregation.
Not our congregation. The Woodlands area of Houston. That's where we are in ministry. That a pastor 20 years ago was a youth pastor, and he had a sexual incident with a teenage girl. She was 17 at the time. He was 22, 23. He was the youth pastor. Basically, you know. Drove her home. They went out, had a dirt road, had a sexual incident, and then he dropped her off at home. She was devastated by this experience, hurt, disgusted about herself, shameful, you know, thought he loved her. It wasn't a rape, and it wasn't illegal, but it was an abuse of power. And so she went to her pastors at the time to report this is what happened, and they said we'll handle this internally and not to get authorities or outsiders involved. So this happened 20 years ago, but it came to light last year when he had moved on and was now a pastor of a church in Tennessee, big mega church up there. He was like one of their teaching pastors, very important person, this guy. Andy Savage is mm-hmm. his name if you want to do your own research. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a year old and yeah. it's in the public spotlight.
Yeah, we're not breaking a story or...
Yeah, right. Yes. Yeah. And so he confessed, and Mike confesses in quotes, if you can't hear me, to the congregation once...
Air quotes.
Yes, once this happened, he confessed to his congregation, said when he was a young man, he had a sexual incident, and the congregation gave a round of applause, a standing ovation for his thing.
And can I add one more thing to that?
Yeah, you bet.
That his... his presentation to his congregation was in response to a blog post that she had made.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, so it came to light because all kind of, this now woman was teenager, decided to bring this forward.
Right.
And so, you know, I read his confession. I looked at it. It did not go into the real details of what the problems and issues was. It wasn't just a person had a sexual incident while in ministry.
Right.
And was now embracing forgiveness and grace. It was a person used their power and influence over another, over somebody in their care.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And even if it wasn't, you know, quote unquote, illegal, it was wrong. You know, that it was an abuse of that power. And it's up to the minister, the youth director, to hold those boundaries, not up to the teenagers to hold those boundaries.
And up to the church.
And up to the church.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Andy Savage will eventually does resign. But during that time, this has happened in happened within our geographic area. I went to their website and I was chatting with people online. And it had this very, obviously, divisive presence on their church Facebook page of either A, Andy Savage is a monster and everybody who is clapping or supporting monsters, or B, Andy Savage brought me and my family to Jesus and we stand by him no matter what.
Right.
And it was very these two big extremes going on. And so I think one of those things where that we were talking about is this idea of because I see the good that they do, that's going to negate any allegation against them or anything like that. Because I have that personal connection.
Right.
You know, and so I think we can see that in our own hashtag church too. This idea of like, because they're so good at what they do ministry-wise, it can't possibly be true.
Right. Yeah. Well, and a piece of that, I don't want to say that this is immaturity in faith necessarily, but it's a lack of clarity about how we come to faith, right?
Yeah.
Andy Savage did not bring anyone to Jesus.
Sure.
The Holy Spirit, God working in their hearts, brought these people to Jesus. Now, God might have been using Andy Savage to do that, but that work is God's. You know, Paul lays this out when he's talking to the Corinthians, saying, you know, some say that you are followers of Paul, some say you're followers of Apollos, but all of you, you're missing the point. All of you are followers of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And I think that that, you know, one side of the story, if we're going to stand by someone, regardless of what other accusations are brought about them, we're missing the point that we were brought to Jesus.
Yeah.
We were not brought to be followers of a pastor or a leader, because those pastors and those leaders, and I include myself in this, we are flawed people, right? We're not intended to stand up and to be visions of perfection.
Right.
Now, you know, for those who were standing and applauding, you know, if I were in that congregation and I were hearing a pastor sharing a story and trying to apologize and trying to confess and embrace the forgiveness of God, which I do believe is his, right?
You know,
my theology of grace is that grace extends even to him in that moment. I don't know that I would have not clapped too.
Yeah.
Because I don't, you know, if I'm sitting in that congregation, I don't know that I would have had enough other information to say, this ain't the full story.
Right.
Or, you know, would I have had the critical thinking in that moment to not have gotten swept up in that emotion? Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's fair to throw that accusation out on, on the congregation either. But what is clear to me, having now done what you did and read and heard reactions to his apology, the apology did not address the issues that the victim raised in her accusations. The apology was basically a, well, I made this mistake when I was a kid, when I was young.
20 years ago.
I made this mistake 20 years ago, yeah. And God's forgiving me, so you all should too.
Mm-hmm.
That is a generalization, but that is how I read and interpret the apology,
yeah.
Having had time a year later to process mm-hmm. it and critically think
yeah,
about
and
it.
Yeah, and that's a, you know, I think a fair interpretation of yeah. that. You know, and this is just one case
right, yeah.
of this, and right. we're not here to do a deep dive into Andy Savage.
No, of course,
but this is yeah. just to give an example or touch some place of this idea of why we do a bad job. And I think one of the things we mentioned is a lone authority figure mm-hmm. in any organization with unlimited power and resources can be easily corrupted by those mm-hmm. same things. And so that can happen easily within a church,
mm-hmm.
whether that's a lone pastor, priest, youth director, children's minister,
yeah.
One person unchecked can have those mm-hmm. things.
Yeah.
So
I think it's also, you know, that the line you mentioned earlier about it was not illegal, but it was inappropriate or was an abuse of power.
Yeah.
I think that's a line that we allow ourselves to blur too easily.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that, you know, there's a clear boundary for us, even within the church, I'd like to think. I'm going to speak for our congregation, right?
Mm-hmm.
For Lord of Life, there's a clear boundary, and we have things set up to prevent adults from having inappropriate relationships with kids,
mm-hmm.
right? We have
Absolutely.
A lot of things in place. We've just gone through a process of revamping some of those mm-hmm. things, making sure people are trained, background checked, et cetera, et cetera. But those areas where it's not illegal, but it's not right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where we as a church have to hold ourselves to a higher standard than
yeah.
a mm-hmm. culture. And that's messy and mm-hmm. tricky and should be messy mm-hmm. and tricky, but sometimes it's easier to pretend like it's not. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a danger that
yeah.
we run as people of faith, is that it's easier to just sweep it under a rug than it is to address with really hard issues like this mm-hmm. sometimes.
Yeah, so authority issues. We also have this idea of like we need to protect our ministry.
Sure.
This
mm-hmm.
person does so much
mm-hmm.
ministry or good in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It can't possibly be true. And also, you know, if it's at a mega church or a church where one singular figure is kind of the figurehead, if that person falls, everything falls with them.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So we need to surround them with protection. So it's not necessarily like, I know it's true and I want to protect my job or my church, but it can't be true because
mm-hmm.
my church would fail if it
right.
is true.
Right.
And I think another thing that's big within churches is this idea of pride.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not like pride, like it could never happen to us, but this pride of, we can fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like,
sure.
Like, if it stays internally,
yeah.
we have control
mm-hmm.
and we can make it right.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as it goes out into the outside world, it'll get messed up.
Mm-hmm.
But this idea of, like, our ministry can fix the problem.
Mm, mm-hmm. That's a great point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Katie, what do you think about that?
I agree. I mean, I think that
yeah.
that is true.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, yes, we try to protect what we have.
Yeah.
You think
yeah.
of it in a family system. I
sure.
mean, just in a family system, we have to protect our family and protect our own.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what that is.
Yeah.
Well, and even in non-sexual violations, right? I mean, you deal with this all the time where you have a kid who's misbehaving.
Yes.
Right? And you want to control the messaging around that.
Mm-hmm.
Just from a kid who's, you know, punched another kid or who screamed at a teacher
right.
during Sunday school, right? You
right.
want to make sure that the parents have a clear message.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure everybody's on the same page. Like,
right.
hey, this is what happened. This is how we're addressing it.
Yes.
And we can take care of it. And I think we take that same attitude
mm-hmm.
and would kind of natural instinct would be to apply it to this larger thing that's going to be potentially
right.
blow up and be more severe.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So these are all definitely ways that we do a bad job in handling these situations. I had some more here. I mean, I think
yeah,
just
sure.
basic tribalism of like,
sure.
if it's within my tribe, it's somewhat more acceptable than when it's in another tribe. So,
right.
so it's easy to condemn the stranger
mm-hmm.
and easier to protect the loved one.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, so I think tribalism is a part of that. And then, you know, so all these things, I guess we got to everything else. There's authority, that I think also we're people that just like sometimes authority figures
yeah.
and respect authority. And that happens
mm-hmm.
a lot within the Christian church. So
yeah.
We're usually at the mercy of an authority every Sunday morning. And so if it's a protection around or an authority figure is going to be the final say.
Yeah.
And a victim is just a rabble rouser who's going against the king or the authority figure
mm-hmm.
in that
right.
situation.
Yep.
And it's easy, I think, sometimes within the context of church to really elevate authority.
Yeah, yeah. And I think at the same time, you know, when we start talking about victims as rabble-rousers, I think that that is a cultural development that we have brought with us. You know, that it's a piece of our own baggage that we carry into the church now. And so, you know, we hear these messages all the time out in the world, and so then something happens in the church, and that's the mindset that we have. Because, you know, this goes back a little bit to our New Year's resolution episode of getting into the Word as well, right? If we're grounded every day in the news of the world, but we're not grounding ourselves in the Spirit of God, in Scripture, in prayer, and in community, then the stuff of the world is what's going to come in and impact the way in which we deal with one another within the confines of the church. I mean, that's the nature of the beast.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I was thinking about this, I was thinking this idea, and it has seemed, and maybe this is my perspective and not your own, that this idea of like a hashtag Me Too, a cultural, like sexual, you know, a clearing of the closet, so to speak, is something that the church should be behind. Like, we should be on board as Christians with those things. Because it comes from a place of, like, strong sexual ethics. It comes from a place of, like, protecting victims. Mm-hmm. It comes from a place of, like, making sure people aren't abusing power.
Things that Jesus seems to have stood by.
Yeah, things that would be easy things for the church to say, like, yeah, I'm about all those things. I want those things to happen in our world and in our culture. So it seems like culturally and religiously, this would be a natural alliance, a natural connection. But sometimes in some portions of Christianity, it is not. Like, instead of embracing the hashtag Me Too and elevating that, we want to diminish it. And so why do you think that is? Why are aspects of Christianity anti this new Me Too movement as it is continuing to
press on? I think for some churches, it's a little risky.
Okay.
To really get behind that and go, okay, this is who we are. Like, we're going to stand firm in this.
Sure.
You know, and that, as outsiders looking in, that could be a really risky thing for a church to just get behind it and go. You have members of the church who might have maybe been part of the other side of the Me Too movement. Sure. And so what are you going to have with the, I mean, what's going to happen with those members in your church?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, there's that, it can be just risky all around.
It can be very risky. And you know, it's a lot of work too. Yeah. I mean,
yes.
And that's not to say that it's not a worthwhile work, but, you know, fully embracing this kind of movement means that you have to, as a congregation and as a culture of your congregation, allow every assumption you have about your own behavior to be challenged. You know, you have to be willing to say, to put someone else's needs before your own, essentially. Say, well, I don't mean it to be offensive if I walk up and call you honey,
right.
But if they find it offensive, you know, we at the table might not, you know, I'm not offended if someone calls me honey. That's my personal stance. But if I call someone else honey and they're offended by it, I need to be aware of that. I need to be respectful of that. And so I think for some of us, because the church has existed for so long in a certain way, there's a, not even a desire to hold on to what was, but there's just a, well, it's always been fine. You know, and so if you're a 60-year-old who's been calling people honey in church every Sunday for the last 60 years, why all of a sudden do I have to stop doing that? You know, if I'm a 30-year-old who's been walking in and giving people hugs during the sharing of the peace every single week since I was a kid, why should I stop having to do that? And it's not necessarily that you should, but that you have to have the conversations and you have to allow your own assumptions and your own, not even your own feelings, but your own assumptions to be put aside to hear the stance of the other. And, you know, together we have to come to a mutual place of how do we move forward so that all people can participate and feel safe and welcomed in this community. And that's what we need to be striving for, right? I honestly don't think anybody in the Christian church would sit down and argue with me that we should not be making all people feel welcomed.
Absolutely.
I think where we start to get into the arguments is over, well, I don't want to have to do that. Right? That when it becomes inconvenient, when it challenges the way that I interact, that's when it becomes hard. And there are things, you know, when I went to seminary, there were things that I had to consciously stop doing because I became aware that it made other people uncomfortable. Not that I was doing it in an uncomfortable way. Not that any of them would say, you know, you were threatening me or anything. Right. But it was an awareness of the way we interact with one another. The way I carry myself does not only matter to me, but it matters to others.
Sure. Yeah, well, hashtag me too is in some ways shaking the social systems that our countries or corporations, our churches, our media is built on. And the church is already sometimes fearful of those of things that shake the system.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Especially because historically in America, the church has been at least privileged or on power or some good things are coming because of the nature of being America. And now it feels maybe this is a threatening thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that these are, you know, things that it's, and sometimes we'll say things like, it's just going to be a witch hunt and things like that, which is, I think, a crazy statement to say.
Yeah.
But that can be a statement that we said about this. I also think that a reason why sometimes we're hesitant to really dive deep in there is because the Me Too movement, like it or not, has become politicized.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's used, again, maybe not just church tribalism, but political tribalism or geographic tribalism of it's bad when the Republicans do it. And we want to point that out and say, like, yeah, and ignore the sins of the Democrats. Or vice versa, when we say the Democrats are engaged in all the sexual impropriety and we want to ignore the sins of the Republicans.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if you are listening to this and being like, absolutely, that's 100% true, maybe that's an engagement for you to check yourself, too. Like, if it's a message for someone else and not for yourself, then I think that could be a warning sign that tribalism is seeping into your own heart.
Yeah. You know, we kind of, as an evangelical Lutheran Church in America, we kind of fall into this a little bit in that we kind of think of ourselves as outside of this because we have not had, I'm setting ourselves up, I should knock on wood or something, but we have not had, by and large scale exposés of this nature. There have certainly been incidents.
Yeah.
I do not want to play that down, but there have not been these kind of large breaking national news type situations. But one of the things that I loved that a group of churches, so in our church we're called synods, those are different regions that we have, and the synod in North Carolina put together a video, and we can maybe link to this in our website or something. We'll put it out there. But it's a video where they have male pastors reading things that had been said to their female colleagues. So these are female pastors who had things said to them in their own experience as female pastors, wrote them down, and then male pastors had to read them. And so, you know, some of them are kind of benign and almost comical to an extent. Like, I don't want to denigrate any of that, but, you know, they're kind of like, ha, huh, you know. But then some of them are just incredibly inappropriate and things that would make me uncomfortable if they had happened to me. But because of the culture and society that we live in, I don't think would ever happen to me. So, you know, there was one, I mean, I'm never going to be pregnant, but so one was a comment on someone's physical features as they were pregnant and as their body was developing.
Yeah.
You know, another one was someone had lost some weight and someone came up and slapped their butt and commented on how good they looked. You know, I cannot imagine someone coming up and doing that to me. Maybe if I lost some weight.
That's the part I can't imagine. Right.
So I can't imagine that happening. But I can't imagine then having to, you know, this is the place that I put myself in. I then have to serve that person communion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have to go and be at that person's bedside.
Yeah, for sure.
When they're in the hospital and be with their spouse or with their kids or, you know, and I have to continue to love and care for this person. But the church at large is like, oh, well, you know, it's the kind of thing where we say, well, that's just Harold. No offense to anyone out there named Harold. I'm just picking a name. Sure, I apologize. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, that's just Harold. You know, Harold doesn't mean any offense. He would never hurt a fly. Yeah. Well, yeah, but he slapped my butt and he commented on my physical features. And I'm uncomfortable with that. And we need to be willing to have a conversation with Harold about why that's uncomfortable.
Yeah. Speaking of that, you know, I've definitely watched these videos. It was like from the 90s of people talking, actors and actresses talking about Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
Who has now been good, you know, in a good way, exposed for all of his sexual indiscretions and assaults. And these were people being like, that's just Harvey being Harvey. You know, basically like, an accepting culture of like we're accepting these things. And that maybe is a good transition to our next stage that I really wanted to focus on.
Yeah.
That is how can we as a Christian community, whether you're a person who has power and influence in your congregation or if you're just a Christian, how can we do better at putting an end to sexual assault or doing handling this in a different or unique way. And I think one of those ways is we're handling here is not accepting social norms where people are made to feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So it's not accepting that's just Harold being Harold, or that's just Harvey being Harvey, mm-hmm. or that's just the way it is. You know, the pastor likes to give full body hugs, and even if it makes you uncomfortable, that's just he is because he's an old guy, and right. that should be right. acceptable at this right. point. Yeah.
And just because something was accepted in the past does not mean it needs to continue to be accepted now.
For sure.
Right? It once was accepted to use the N-word to refer to anyone you wanted to.
Yeah.
We do not culturally accept that now.
For
sure. Why do we have this other... Just because we're more comfortable with this particular thing yeah. doesn't mean that right. it should also continue into the future.
Yeah. So what other things can we do to say, this is what are the ways that we want to handle the situation of hashtag church do better and how to prevent these things from happening in the future?
Well, I think, number one, holding people accountable is not a bad thing.
Yeah. No, it's a great thing.
You know, right? I mean, to say that's not acceptable, you cross the line. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it is somebody who is the one leader of the church or whoever it is, to understand that as Christian people, we believe in forgiveness and we believe in grace, and God's grace is bigger than anything that any of us do. Mm-hmm. So that is one thing on its own. But at the same time, if it is an illegal action or if it is something that just because God's forgiveness is there does not necessarily separate you from any legal action
yeah, right.
that might happen yep. in any kind of situation. Mm-hmm.
Forgiveness does not prevent consequences.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So I think, and not just sweeping it under the rug and having to handle it internally, you mm-hmm. know, to, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A good balance with justice and mercy
right.
combined. And sure. I think sometimes we call for justice for the outsider while mercy for the insider.
Yes.
And both of those things need to be mm-hmm. attributed to both.
Absolutely.
Justice and mercy are good things.
Yes.
And justice may look like conviction.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that does not mean that you're outside the grace of Jesus.
Right.
But by being afraid of bringing real justice to the situation mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. an area that I think we need to be better at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. We need to be aware, and we do this in our own personal lives too, right? If there is someone in your life who has hurt you in any way, you know, mm-hmm. a friend who said something bad about you or who lied to you, or an ex partner of some form that you've broken up with, you know, we have this same notion of we break up with them or we cut that person, we've removed that person mm-hmm. from our life, but at some point we come to a place where we forgive them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, there's an element of sometimes a leader or someone in the church or someone that we know is committing that behavior, they might leave, right? If we approach Harold or Harvey and say, this behavior is inappropriate, mm-hmm. they might say, I'm not going to change and I'm going to leave this church because of it. And we have to be okay with
yeah,
that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because they are not leaving God's mm-hmm. grace.
Right.
Right. God's grace is going to continue to go with them, but we have to be willing to say that is not going to be tolerated in our church,
mm-hmm.
because it's the same thing that we would set up for someone that was working with our kids or with our youth, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the policy that we at Lord of Life has set up, that we have very strict and very clear guidelines of how you're going to interact. And if you're not following these, you are not going to be allowed to
Correct.
Be working with our children or with our youth.
And you know, and I think too, I wonder back to the Andy Savage thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. You know, he was hired on by another church. And
did
kind of
know.
The
yeah.
same, maybe the same role that didn't know. I mean, like, I think that we especially as church workers, as all three of us are, need to be open and honest
yeah.
and say, this is what I've done in the past. I mean, if you don't need to be working with kids or you don't need to be working, you know what I mean, with
mm-hmm.
children or minors or whatever,
yeah.
then that needs to come to... You know, we need to know that.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. you know, I've been in a couple contexts where I've been next to communities. So not in my own congregations, but communities in my areas have been affected because within the ELCA, we have a policy that if a pastor or a rostered leader is found guilty of any sort of boundary violation. And by boundary mm-hmm. violation, we mean any of this sort of abuse of power,
mm-hmm.
usually involving a sexual nature or a sexual relationship of some sort. If that comes to light, all of their previous contexts are notified about
mm-hmm.
this. You know, and this is part of not sweeping it under the rug. And this
yeah.
is
right.
part of the help of of us having a larger structure, you know, yes. a synod and a national church that kind of helps provide guidelines mm-hmm. for this sort of thing. We're not on an island doing our own thing. Mm-hmm. And so that goes back and says, you know, we are aware that this happened. If anything happened in your context, please mm-hmm. know that you can come forward. Please know that we want to provide support for mm-hmm. you. Please yeah. know that we have processes for this. And I think, so what that comes to me is if your question, Patrick, is what can we as individuals do, right? We're kind of thinking on a corporate church level, but what can we as individuals do is one, be honest with our own experience.
Yeah.
And two, trust the words of victims.
That's what I have on my list.
Yeah. I want to mm-hmm. say that. I mean, yes, we live in a society in which we believe that you are innocent in the eyes of the law until yeah. you are proven guilty. Mm-hmm. But that does not mean that all victims are liars or that mm-hmm. they should be treated as liars or sure. that the assumption should be that they are lying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, when someone, if we are in the church and someone comes and tells us that they feel unsafe or they feel violated or they feel betrayed or hurt or damaged in mm-hmm. any way, our first stance as people of God, of people of Jesus who have been ourselves healed with the love and mm-hmm. forgiveness of God, should be to work to offer them love and healing and forgiveness.
Yeah.
And that's probably going to mean trusting and believing their story.
And mm-hmm. listening.
And listening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when these things happen, when somebody comes forward with allegations, especially in somebody well-liked, whether that's in the private sector, in the sure. public, in the public mm-hmm. space, you know, mm-hmm. a typical response is definitely going to be, she or he is lying.
Right.
You know, like that they're doing that for their 15 minutes of fame, right. to get rich. All these things are going on at play. And I think those are weird statements, right? Like, I just don't know of any person in society that's like, I made all my money by accusing others of sexual assault. Or like, right. I became famous by doing
sure.
that. Mm-hmm. Like, that just doesn't really seem like that's something that happens. And so I don't know why we sometimes assume those things. Now, are there cases where someone lies? Yes.
Sure.
I mean, in every situation, mm-hmm. there are cases where someone lies. But I don't think that makes that the default.
Right.
And trusting a victim or trusting an allegation does not mean, this person that I know and like has been one person has said these things, immediately remove them from power, mm-hmm. immediately mm-hmm. Strip them of all that's going on in their life. It doesn't necessarily mean that, but it does mean I trust what they're saying and we need to look closer at this situation.
Right.
And we need mm-hmm. to get involved. And I think part of that getting involved or looking closer means trusting outside sources mm-hmm. and not just saying that this is a situation that we as a community or a church can handle internally.
Right.
Like, it's not appropriate to say, like, our pastor was accused of sexual assault and the person who's going to identify or investigate that is the people he hired, you right, know, like, yeah. or the board that he's been working with over the last right. 20 years. Yeah. Like, that's just not a good place to be in.
Yeah.
It's trusting in whether that's somebody from a greater church system,
right.
another church, whether that's legal authority saying this has happened and we want someone else to investigate this mm-hmm. to help us decipher truth versus feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, this is why police departments have internal affairs departments, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they yeah. have people who are set aside to provide that outside investigation when there's yeah. corruption or anything like that going on. I mm-hmm. think, you know, we don't necessarily need an internal affairs department in the sure. in the congregation, but we do need to have that trust of people to come in and offer feedback, offer a reflection on a situation mm-hmm. that we are not equipped to handle ourselves.
Right. Yeah.
I think the other piece of that is that we need to place our trust back into God.
Yes.
You know, we've talked about our identity being rooted in Christ a little bit on this podcast before. But, you know, if we are so convinced that the structure will crumble if this one person is taken down or if this comes to light, we are missing the promise of God.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't care how many sexual scandals come forward and are brought to light, the church of God, the kingdom of God, will not crumble.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It will look radically different than it did before, mm-hmm. and perhaps that's a good thing because God is continually renewing the church and calling us into become the new humanity that we were called to be, mm-hmm. but it will not be destroyed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's good news.
It is good news. Mm-hmm. It is good news for the victim and for mm-hmm. the accuser, right?
Absolutely.
Sure. No, wait. Those are the same people. For the victim and the accused.
Yes.
Would that be right? Yeah. Those are different people.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that's a good stopping point for us. I think we've gotten a good place here of we've identified things that I think we do poorly, and also things I think we can do a better job of.
Yeah.
And obviously, when it comes to allegations of sexual assault and when it comes to handling sexual ethics within a congregation, it's going to be hard. Mm-hmm. And it's also not going to be an easy fix.
No.
And yeah. I think that's maybe the last thing maybe we can look at is assuming that there's an easy solution to these problems. And that's just not the way it is. Right. There are good solutions or better ways to handle things in the future than we've done in the past. But that doesn't mean that there will not be victims mm-hmm. anymore.
Right.
There will not be doubters anymore. Mm-hmm. There will not be assaulters anymore. And so it's getting prepared now for when those things come, of how I want preparing my heart. Mm-hmm. And my heart is something that wants to beat heavily for those who are sexually assaulted, those who are hurt by systems and by people of power, and also how can we as a Christian community offer both justice and mercy to those mm-hmm. that are assaulting? Mm-hmm. How can both of those mm-hmm. things be at play? Mm-hmm. And that's hard. Mm-hmm. And that's a really difficult thing, because it'd be much easier to just not listen to one of those parties,
right.
to just diminish the victim or diminish the assaulter. But God somehow finds space for both mm-hmm. in his love.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sometimes hard for me to right. do.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not hard for God somehow to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is the good news of the kingdom of God, right? Is that when mm-hmm. we come to the final banquet, there's a decent chance that we're going to be sitting elbow to elbow with the person who has hurt us most in mm-hmm. this life.
Yeah.
Because God's grace is big enough to cover that. And because when we sit at that table, God's grace will so overwhelm us that we won't even be aware mm-hmm. necessarily that that's who we're sitting next to. And so
yeah.
if we start to interact in that way in this life, not in that we mm-hmm. brush things under the rug or pretend that those things never happened, we have to acknowledge those if we start to mm-hmm. act like that in this life, it will change how we approach justice and mercy. Absolutely. That's the point of it.
Yeah. And if you are a person who's been sexually assaulted, who are still carrying these wounds or scars, know that it's not your fault on any level
mm-hmm.
and that it's not about what you were doing inappropriately, your role in this. It's really about you were taken advantage of and victimized, and you are valuable and loved. And if we as a church community, podcast community, can support and love you through that, we want to do those things.
Yep,
we absolutely. Don't want that to be a burden and weight you carry alone. And I think it's too long those who have been victims of sexual assault, women, children, men, have carried those burdens alone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's not the desire here, is to carry mm-hmm. those things alone.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's going to bring us to our recommendation.
Recommendation time. All right.
I think you're up, Pastor.
I'm up?
Yeah.
I've got nothing.
That would have been good to know before we hit record. All right. So today, we're releasing this episode on January 7th?
7th.
7th is a Monday. So we're releasing this on January 7th, which means we're in the new year, which means my recommendation is going to be, wait for it, drum roll, please.
You need a really long drum roll?
I might need long drum roll.
No, I could cut dead space out. So you can just think.
All right, let me just think for a minute then. All right, so my recommendation for us this week is a podcast that I've been listening to and enjoying. It's called The Bible Project. It's a great way to kind of introduce yourself to a different way of thinking about Scripture. It's a couple guys out of Portland, Oregon. They will present a lot of ideas that might seem crazy and even ridiculous, perhaps, at first. But they provide some really great background for it. It's just a whole new way to think about the Bible overall. So
okay.
if you're into podcasts, which if you're listening to this, you probably are, I'd recommend that. Add it to your queue, if you will.
I very much enjoy The Bible Project.
Oh, see, I've got a second on my...
I have not listened to it yet. Mm-hmm. I'll have to...
Yeah, you check it out.
One of the main hosts there also hosts a podcast called Exploring My Strange Bible,
mm-hmm.
and that, based off his teachings, like kind of goes through kind of the interesting parts of the Bible that I think it's easy to miss as an English speaker and reader, and as an American in year 2018 mm-hmm. or 2019.
Yeah.
At release. Yeah. that'd be easy to miss what's going on
yep.
kind of culturally and historically.
Yeah.
So I think it's really neat. And the more you learn, it's really cool.
The more you know. Yeah, that was the old NBC thing.
Yep.
And knowledge is power. That was going way back to G.I. Joe, right?
That's knowing is half the battle.
Yeah, that's it. All right. So with that, thank you for bringing in the new year in 2019. And we hope you're enjoying the Beyond Sunday podcast. You can find all of our latest episodes, as well as how to get a hold of us and how to find all of our information on beyondsundaypodcast.com. And be sure to check us out on Facebook as well at Beyond Sunday Podcast Facebook page.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We are happy to have you. Hopefully this can be a good tool to engage yourself, mm-hmm. your people around you, to say how do you handle this, mm-hmm. And even your congregations and churches to say what do we do during the midst of these times.
Absolutely.
All right, well, welcome to 2019. Woo! Happy to be here with you.
Dun, dun, dun.
All right, have a great week.
See you, everybody.
Bye.
Great New Year's resolution. I'm going to listen to this podcast once a week all year long.
Oh,
our podcast.
This specific one.
The church. I'm going to listen to this episode.
I'm like, oh gosh.
I'm going to listen to Beyond Sunday once a week, all week long. That's my resolution.
I'm going to record it once a week, all week long.
That's awesome.